from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Now, it's Jeffrey Wright and Company.
Tell your story.
Live on Memphis's sports station, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on your radio dial, 92.9 FM, ESPN, as well as 680 AM. But you can also keep up with the program anytime, anywhere. If you are away from a radio dial, download the Odyssey app. It's free to listen. It's free to subscribe to 92.9 FM ESPN to keep you up to date with all of the content here on 92.9. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company this week is a host for the Locked On Podcast Network. Does play-by-play college hoops, college baseball for ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter, on X, at Lennox on Baseball. Steve Lennox, good day, sir.
Good day. Back for day number two. Thanks for having me back. I don't know what the decision-making process was or the thought process was after Monday, but glad I didn't get any emails this morning, right?
I say
that tongue-in-cheek.
One thing I can always guarantee, you certainly won't get emails from me. That's the way we operate. We're glad to have you back. Let's celebrate what we got coming up on the program. Steve and I were talking before the show, and we just kind of asked the question, what's the main thing? And without a clear main thing, I think as we now head into the second full week of preseason, this is kind of the preseason week that for those of us that are a little bit older, this is what we used to use as the equivalent of preseason week three, the dress rehearsal week. Everybody's going to get their starters out there for the most part. We're going to see what we've got. And then week three becomes what we are used to week four being of the preseason where, and we're just trying to get the rosters finalized. We don't really want to risk an injury the week before the season starts. So, with football on the horizon and the thick of preseason week two, what are some of the big questions we have for the fall? So we're going to explore that here in just a minute. About 2:35, Tim Murray of VSiN going to join the program. We'll talk some college football with Tim. We'll go through the AP Top 25. We know that almost every single year there's going to be a team that's in the preseason top 10. If we had to bet on one team that's in the preseason top 10 to fall out, who indeed would that be? We'll talk about that and more. We'll get into the list to start hour number two. A familiar person back in the NFL. I still can't believe it. We'll discuss that as well as an astonishing valuation for the Dallas Cowboys. We'll get into that. We've got tee times for the FedEx St. Jude Championship. The FedEx Cup playoffs begins here in Memphis, Tennessee. And also, we've got an about face with Jim Harbaugh. Hard Knocks episode 2 returns tonight. We'll preview that. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But Steve, I think let's start here because it feels like there's never really a bad time to just dig into the NFL, especially it feels like we're now getting into everybody having to send out their calendar requests of, all right, when are we doing the draft? Are we doing an auction? Are we doing snake? Like everyone's starting to get back into football mode. So I thought let's do a proper preview of what we're kind of thinking about as we head into the NFL season. And I'll yield to you. Where does it start for you? What are the big questions that you have?
Three in a row for the Chiefs?
When is the last time we've had three in a row? Is it the Steelers? Because right the Pats never did it.
Nope. Cowboys
were 3-4, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Were the Redskins, did they ever go 3 in a row? I thought it was like 3-5 or something like that.
No, I think you've got it. Pittsburgh, there's 2 in a row, 79-80. Man, you're going back a lot of twos.
I think
it would be neat. The last back-to-back
before this was the Pats, whatever, 04-05. Is it 03-04? I want to say it's
4-5.
Yeah, 4-5.
And that was 3 out of 4 for them.
Correct.
Yeah. No, I'd sign up for it right now. I'd love to see him get 3 in a row. I love Patrick Mahomes. I really do. And his talent on the field. I'd love to see that number 3. I'd sign up for them in the Super Bowl as the AFC champ right now.
In terms of you're prognosticating that, or you forget if you're setting aside your Jets fandom, that's what you'd be rooting for?
Yep. Yes. Yes, I want to see him do it. I really do. I'm not a root against a guy. I'm root for a guy. And he's got 2 in a row. And I'm saying he, but it's the Chiefs, right? It's the Chiefs organization.
Is it?
But it's Patrick Mahomes. It solidifies him. It takes him to another level in the conversation of great quarterbacks and where he's going to be. To get 3 in a row and number 4, and he's still got a lot of mileage left. I mean, it's him and everybody else. We want to talk about who, you know, we talked about it a little bit, Jeffrey, before we went on. Who's that next quarterback? Who's going to take it from him? It's not Tom Brady. He's no longer there.
I mean, that is the question now for Mahomes. If he does indeed win 3 in a row, because right now Brady set kind of the bar so lofty that it's almost like, well, I don't know if matching accolades is going to be what tops him, but at a certain point you can start changing the argument. And if you do something right, Brady's never done, well, that becomes another feather in your cap.
Right. And I don't know that he hits Brady's numbers for his career. I mean, Tom Brady to 45, 46 years old at a high level, I don't know that Patrick Mahomes is going to want to do that. But right now, he's got that in front of him. Say they don't win it this year. Is he going to win 2 in a row again in his career? I think if they don't win it again this year, he's got options to win another one down the road. But is he going to be in this position again where he can win 3 straight? I don't think that happens.
Well, I think there's
but
also...
right now, that's on the table, and I'm rooting for it.
I'm with you in the sense that the Chiefs with Mahomes feel inevitable. In particular, last year to me was actually the more demoralizing. Like, if you're a fan of an AFC team, last year was one of the more demoralizing ones because
right,
I don't even think that team was that good. I guess I should specify. I don't think that team offensively was that good. Defensively, that team probably was criminally underrated. I mean, you have an absolute game wrecker up front. You had great tackling, and you had a secondary that could largely play man-to-man, which is pretty unusual in the NFL. But that certainly did not feel like the best roster that's going to ever be around him. I guess the one pushback I'd have, and this is more maybe devil's advocate, because I'm kind of with you. I think we fall into the mode of when we're in the midst of the dynasty and greatness, we don't ever see it pausing. But Brady does go, right, he goes a decade without winning one, played for two, loses to the Giants twice. But largely there's that decade stretch where you're wondering, like, do they ever get back there? That's a question for me. Do the Chiefs run into, right now it just feels so inevitable, but is there ever like a balancing out?
And I think with one of the things of the Patriots, you had Brady, Belichick. You have Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes. Andy Reid is not going to coach this team for as long as Belichick was with the Patriots. He's got an exit ramp, an off ramp at some point in time. In my view, I don't think he goes, you know, another, you know, a decade.
I tend to agree. So, I tend to agree with you, but that's kind of like human being brain. But when I put football coach brain on, why would I stop? I'm coaching him.
Yeah, ego, like, right? Ego. Yeah.
Like if I'm coaching him. Like you're gonna have to. I'm gonna have to die on the sideline with some honor.
Well, at some point, Andy Reid for me is a guy who's got to take care of his health.
I mean, I do think that's right? a huge part of it.
And so with that, Patrick Mahomes, second half of his career, beginning second half of his career, is he working with another head coach?
Has anyone ever retired with an all-time great? I guess to a certain degree you can make the argument Shula with Marino.
Where was Bill Walsh with the 49ers?
Hadn't he handed it over to Seifert?
Yeah. Isn't that amazing what he did with Montana and Young?
He was able to juggle that.
Right.
Now, and that's also the other thing. That's a completely different day and age. Now, you'd be paying Montana so much that you couldn't even afford, you know what I mean, cap-wise, you couldn't even afford to juggle that. You would have traded Young for whatever you could get. Or if you make the decision to go...
Right,
Early in the tenure, you would trade Young... And you don't even get there. But obviously, they end up trading Montana eventually. But it's like that. I don't know if we'll ever see a situation where you could have two Hall of Famers on the roster at the same time at quarterback.
I mean, you could have had it with the timeline. Could you have had it with Favre to Rodgers if Favre had stuck, if he was able to stick around a little bit longer? No. And then even with the Packers presently.
It's probably the closest equivalent. And if you tell me it happens, it's going to happen at a place like Green Bay where they build primarily through the draft and they don't have a true owner to listen to. Like, that's another huge part of this is like, you know, the owner eventually is going to get what they want and they're going to play usually the shiny new toy. It really works in Green Bay because... Hey, if I've got Brett Favre and I draft Aaron Rodgers, well, there's no owner to sit there and tell me this is who's got to play. Like, yes, you have a GM that's running the football operations, but they're not benching an MVP, and kind of the same thing. I think that's probably the only spot it could happen.
Did I catch you off guard by saying number one is the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes for third straight Super Bowl championship title?
Not really, because isn't that where we begin? I mean, in the end, like they're the king, and until someone dethrones them, they're story number one. And I guess that's kind of my offshoot. My big question is, can Joe Burrow return to form? And it feels like, as much as I love watching Josh Allen play, and I think Allen gets a bad rap in the playoffs, his playoff losses largely aren't his fault. Like, in the end, show me what Josh Allen did wrong when he scores with 13 seconds left in Arrowhead last year. Okay, maybe he shouldn't have taken the shot on second down, the kill shot. But in the end, that is a kick you expect your NFL paid kicker to make and tie it up. Now, I think Mahomes probably scores if he has to, but who knows? But Burrow does seem to be the one guy that really kind of has this. Something that while Mahomes just overwhelms us with his sheer just God-given ability, Burrow's got kind of that, yeah, I just know how to play the position. Like, it's kind of the Montana. It's the Brady. He's obviously more athletic than Brady, but it's kind of that same, it's in that same vein. Like, nothing Joe does is overwhelming, but at the same time, you look up and you're like, God, this guy's good.
Right. When you're watching him, and we touched on that, Jeffrey, before we went on air of how, you know, and I saw something earlier today. Actually, I'm reading a book. It's a baseball book, Red Sox Day, A Day at Fenway. Red Sox, just one game. The writer writes about the Red Sox and Yankees from the early 2000s. And even at that point said, we don't watch sports the way we used to. We're more involved in everything going around the sport than actually we watch the game. But Joe Burrow, to your point, you watch him over the course of a full game, over the full course of a full season. You don't have to be an NFL scout, an NFL coach. You know the talent's there. But the way we take everything in nowadays, we see the highlights and we're automatically thinking, this guy's great. But then when you see him in the playoffs, it's like, why was everyone talking about this person, this quarterback, this player in such high regard when they flopped in this game that I sit down to watch them on? And then we all become experts on them, even though we haven't really seen entire games that probably told the story. You know the story because you've watched these guys game in, game out. You see, whoa, that was a bad pass. He's missed that pass consistently. And he missed it again in a big game come January, February.
And I kind of look at it in these terms. There's no statistical analysis that like points this out. But I always keep track of if I'm watching on Sunday and the guy gets the ball and I'm convinced he's going to score, even if it doesn't come to fruition, I take note of that. It's kind of why I'm flagging C.J. Stroud for being maybe special, because there was a good solid run there of like 6 or 7 weeks where he just had the magic. And it's like as soon as he got the ball, you're like, it didn't matter what the circumstances were. You're like, he's going to score. And I do think like validating your breakout year is a hard thing to do. So it's one of those things where it's like, I want to see him do it again. But if he does do it again, he's going to get into a different tier for me. But I think back to when Burrow got the football at Arrowhead, I believe it was tied. I was convinced, man, they were going to go down and score. Now it didn't happen. And same thing in the Super Bowl. It's like I was convinced, you know, if he gets about an extra half of a second, Ja'Marr Chase was breaking free and they were going to break the Rams' heart. But there's something about, like, he does seem to have kind of the yang to Mahomes' yin. And can he regain that form? Or are we just going to see someone else that rises to the occasion and says, I can be Peyton Manning to Tom Brady, or I can be the Roethlisberger of this equation. Are we going to see that develop? Because right now it just feels like Mahomes is inevitable.
Right. And you mentioned C.J. Stroud. Did you see Dan Orlovsky on ESPN? He had quarterback ratings. And I liked how he did it. Arm strength, top 10. Ball placement, top 10. Mechanics, decision making with the football. That one caught my eye. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is number one. Burrow is number three. But C.J. Stroud is number four. And I think that's a bit of, I like how he broke this down. But decision making with the football, C.J. Stroud's ahead of Patrick Mahomes. And Jordan Love and Brock Purdy are in front for Dan Orlovsky, in front of Patrick Mahomes. This is an interesting read.
Yeah, and actually, I don't even really have a problem with it, because I think Mahomes can get risky with the football. Now,
yes,
the difference is when it's crunch time, he doesn't really get risky. That's also when you see him take off and run, and that's why he can, you know, he has those killer just, it's the fourth quarter, and you're like, how did he just rip off 50 yards? And it's like, well, as soon as he saw the numbers advantage, he took off, and he's a good enough athlete. But he can get loose with the football, particularly in the pocket, and, you know, they kind of have an offense that's a little bit more free-flowing, it's less structured, and because of that, at times, if you're just not on the same page as everybody, you can get a little loose with it. I don't really have a problem with that.
Is it fair or unfair to label Josh Allen on the other end of that? Big moment, he doesn't know to tuck it or to be a little bit more conservative, where he's going to force it in there or try to do something that that's going to result in, you know, in a loss of downs, you know, short on a fourth and long or something, you know, something like that, or, you know, throw it into protection and throw an interception.
So my answer for Allen is it depends on the game. Because the thing that's fascinating about Allen is if you break down his numbers, when everyone's talking about the turnovers, most of the games that the turnovers happen in are against the lesser opponents. Like, for instance, most of the times that you'll be watching Josh Allen, he's going to throw four picks against the Jets. Like, that's just part of it.
Right.
But then when you look at his numbers last year against playoff teams and in the playoffs, he's pretty good with the football. I think the thing that's going to be fascinating about Josh Allen is now that they've gotten rid of Diggs, who is clearly, from a football perspective, getting rid of Diggs does not make your team better. I want to be very clear on that. From a roster perspective, that doesn't make your team better. I just think Diggs has a shelf life, and he's clearly not as good as he thinks he is. And malcontents, that was kind of the other thing about Josh Allen, is when you realize when Diggs is throwing his little temper tantrums, you watch, that's when Allen starts to force it to him, and that's when he starts to get kind of some cheap turnovers. I'm curious to know if there is a little bit of addition by subtraction with that offense. And now you get rid of Diggs, but my football brain says you don't really get better getting rid of good players, but we do have examples of it.
So where does that put C.J. Stroud and the Texans with Stephon Diggs?
I understand why the Texans did it. I would have been a little bit more hesitant because he's going to be in a contract year. Everyone does the, oh, well, it's perfect. He's going to be in year one. He's going to be on his best behavior. But I always point out, what takes precedence, year one or contract year? Because for me, I think it's contract year.
He's going to want his. He wants his numbers.
And there's more people that you've got to spread the ball to with him. And also, I don't love having a potential malcontent with a young quarterback that's coming into his own. I get why they did it, though. The offer comes in so cheap that you just sit there and you go, you know what? Let's roll. Let's do it. And I don't fault them, but I don't think this is the slam dunk that maybe the NFL consensus does.
It must say, in my view, it says a lot about the organization of what they think of C.J. Stroud, that he can handle this, because it's got the potential to be an issue. Is it going to be an issue? We wait and see. We have to wait and see how things play out. But yeah, it's certainly got the potential to be there.
I think there's
and
another.
And if they get along, you know, I mean, it's certainly a gamble, but, you know, the risk and the reward, I mean, the reward here could be great for a young quarterback and a team. And, you know, hey, Stephon Diggs, it's on him too.
For sure.
You are in a contract here. You know what? You do, you know, yes, you need your numbers in order to get that next payday, but you also have to be on your best behavior. But really, we don't want storylines.
Well,
teams are looking at him.
It also becomes imperative on the organization. Hey, one of the advantages that you have with CJ being in year two, he's going to at least be on his rookie deal for another 2 years after this season. Are you able to communicate to Diggs, hey, do what's expected of you, and we're going to take care of you. We're going to get you a deal, but we don't need you worried about your numbers. We need you worried about winning football. And if they can they can do that as an organization, then yes, I think that can be a good marriage. I just have the opinion asking receivers to not be divas is kind of an exercise in futility.
And C.J. Stroud's going to have say, hey, Diggs on a contract. You want him here?
Yep.
Yay or nay? And he's going to have a lot of sway with that.
And I think kind of we're getting very AFC focused. But that's kind of what I think that's by design, because the weird reality for me right now with the NFL, and maybe this will be entirely proven wrong, but if you're asking me who's a Super Bowl contender, most of the teams I'm going to rattle off are from the AFC.
Right.
When we get to the NFC, it becomes this weird question for me of, all right, I think San Francisco is clearly on a different tier. But it's important to note No one has repeated as the NFC champion since the Seahawks did it in 13-14. No rematch has happened in the NFC title game since 93 and 94 when the Cowboys and the Niners split. So it feels like next team up, if it's not the Niners, is the Lions. But that would break a lot of trends if we saw both of them get back. And to me, like, that's kind of the real question. Is indeed San Francisco on a different tier? And further, are the Lions starting to emerge as a true second contender? Because that's kind of where I'm going with the NFC. It's like, all right, I think the Eagles roster is still good enough to sit there and go, don't forget about us. But there's that weird reality of, like, how much of Philly's run to the Super Bowl is two good coordinators, both of which are now head coaches in the league. Steichen did a pretty good job in Indy, and Gannon did a pretty good job in Arizona, considering how bad the roster was, not having his quarterback for basically three quarters of the season. Like, have they actually fixed things, or was it a situation where you had a couple of really good coordinators that were able to get guys in the right positions, and you just have a kind of a nut job as your head coach?
And nut jobs always lead teams to another Super Bowl.
It's like, nut job works when you're winning. And I don't think it's a coincidence that it played out the way that it did. Like, what, they start off, was it 10-1? And then they, like, when you have a coach like Sirianni, if you're winning, nobody cares when it's, like, corny and ridiculous. But start losing a little bit, and you sit there and go, like, whoa, what is this guy doing? What's this guy's deal?
Right. Yeah. All of a sudden, the warts are that more visible to the outsiders. Yeah, there are a lot of question marks there. We talked about your guy from Memphis, Mr. Huff, who went from my Jets to the Eagles.
Yep.
And I'm glad he got paid. And I would like to see him have individual success. It's that those second tier. You know, I mean, it is. As you kind of transition to this, you know, we're talking AFC, just going up and down here. And what comes to mind is, you know, okay, the Lions. In the NFL, it's different than other sports. You know, there's that window. But can you take a step back in order to take a step forward? You know, if the Texans took a step back this year and fell short of even making the playoffs, you know, exiting in the wild card.
Well, to your point, did any of us expect the Jaguars last year to take the step back that they did?
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's perfect. Thank you. And are they going to, you know, that step back, is that going to benefit them here for 24? And the Eagles made it to the Super Bowl 2 years ago. But last year, like you said, I mean, that start, yeah, it's going to be the Eagles again. And then all of a sudden, no. And you start to understand the reasons why. It was an emphatic no. They're just not going to get there. But, yeah, looking up and down, just the standings and the teams in the NFC, you know, this comes to mind.
Well, there's also
how quick is it? How, you know, what we're going to watch tonight, Hard Knocks. How quickly are the Bears going to be competing in the NFC?
I mean, that's the thing.
You take a big step forward this year. Next year, are you one of the teams that you're contemplating and considering for the NFC Championship game? It can happen that quick.
I mean,
but those roots, that foundation, start this year for Caleb Williams and the Bears.
There's no question, because another big part of that, like what we're talking about, first place schedules are real in the NFL. Like, part of the reason why I like the Bengals this year is they have the advantage because Burrow got hurt. They're going to play a fourth place schedule. Like, they're going to have the schedule advantage. And, you know, while Burrow's traditionally been a little bit of a slow starter, they're going to have the opportunity to get out in front and perhaps get that one seed. And we've seen, like, that can be a very, very big deal. But, like, on the flip side, it's like, okay, the Jags had to play a first place schedule. They get banged up. Trevor, I don't think, was healthy for much of the year, but, like, he's a big question mark for this year. It's like, that's kind of another big question that we have is, like, which of these quarterbacks that got paid are going to prove, hey, they're worth it? Like, is Trevor gonna remind us, hey, last year was kind of a lost year, banged up. We didn't figure some things out when we should have, but we're back on track. Tua, is he going to prove that he's worth it? Like, Justin Herbert, are you going to be the guy that draft Twitter thinks you are? And like, these are all like legitimate questions that I have, like, at quarterback. It's kind of the same thing like in the NFC. Is Jalen Hurts going to prove, hey, last year was not as bad as it looked at the second half of the year, and like, I am going to be a part of this story? Like, I think that's kind of where we are. We're at this weird spot where Mahomes feels like he's on a different tier. Who is going to like come up and maybe not join him, but who's going to be a threat to him?
Right. And Josh Allen's been the closest, right? I mean, he was right there. But it's amazing of, you know, you say, and I think you hit on something that, you know, the average fan does not pay attention to, of, you know, that first place schedule. It's going to be a lot harder this year for some teams because of, you know, hey, you had to step backwards, but now you're not playing that for, you know, that top tier. You're playing the teams in your division, and then it goes from there. But you can make that turnaround in a 3-year period of, okay, great year, okay, so-so year. Now our schedule is different. It's advantageous to us, and we move forward. But, you know, just how many of these guys have been paid before? You know, what is worth it? How do they live up to their contracts? I mean, are we just asking for one Super Bowl title for Trevor Lawrence and the money was worth it? Tua the same? And I just don't know that Tua ever gets to that game. It's to me, there's one thing to, you know, yes, you win the Super Bowl, but Jalen Hurts has gotten to the Super Bowl. He's got that on his resume. And that's different than making it to the AFC or NFC championship game for me. And the money is there. And the money, you know, it's set up to fail where, you know, the expectations are through the roof. I mean, what is success on these big time deals?
Well, I mean, I think it's an interesting question with the Niners too, like to your same point. Like,
yeah, I don't pay him. I mean, he's on a different tier, right? He won't be open to the huge number with his next deal.
I bet his agent thinks he is. I mean, to me, he is, yeah. He's the ultimate Rorschach test. I've always felt like, to me, he's not as bad as draft Twitter hates him. Because he's not.
There was a reason he was drafted. He was one pick away from not being drafted, right?
Correct. He is Mr. Irrelevant. He is not touched by God in terms of just being physically overwhelming. But also, what I factor in with him is he really does know how to play the position. Like, when I watch him, and so much of this is, to me, he's kind of an indictment on college football, though I get why it happens. College football's become so much of an RPO, deep shot, scheme up big plays that I don't feel like guys really know how to play the position. Maybe I should say it in the traditional sense that we think about playing quarterback, which is read coverage, know where the soft spots in the zone are, timing, know when I got to get the ball out, where is it supposed to go, all of these things. He has played in a system starting at Iowa State where everything was on him at the line of scrimmage. And so he has command of an offense. And so I don't think he's necessarily just ultimate game manager. Like, I do think he's got a skill set, but he also falls into that category of like, it's not fair to say the whole reason the Niners lost the Super Bowl is Brock Purdy.
Right.
But think about when it got to third down in the Super Bowl, who'd you got more faith in? Brock Purdy?
Not Brock Purdy.
Patrick Mahomes. And like, that's the other thing. It's
not
like,
Brock Purdy.
Usually when you get to those games, you're not just going to out roster someone. You're probably going to have to go toe to toe. Like, you're going to have Eli Manning go toe to toe and make throws against Tom Brady. Does it mean that right. Eli Manning's better than Tom Brady? No, but you got to have someone that you're going into the fight that is close enough.
Look, I'm an outsider when it comes to the NFL to a certain degree. I like my team. I don't know much about the other teams in the NFL from week to week. And I agree with what you're saying about college football, and developing quarterbacks. But I'm almost becoming steadfast in that the NFL has to understand, even if they're drafting a top 10 quarterback, that quarterback is far from a finished project. It's not smoothing over the rough edges anymore. You have to develop your quarterback. And with what has happened over the last handful of years where they have less and less time in camp and they can only do certain things at certain times during camp, it's to the detriment of these quarterbacks. And if I'm an owner, I'm saying we've got to reevaluate this. We need a legit quarterback coach in here and understand these guys are not finished products. They don't have the maturity. They don't have the presence in a lot of ways. And, you know, some of them do, and some of them are close to that. Joe Burrow, Tua, I mean, outside the injuries, is Tua as close to a finished product as he could have been coming out of Alabama?
I don't know how he gets much better because of kind of physical. Like, to me, Tua's always going to be the guy where he's got to throw on time. He's got to make the right reads. He's going to have to play the position properly. But, like, kind of the same thing that we're talking about, it's now starting to bleed into the NFL where it's like, I don't necessarily blame college coaches. In the end, you're paid to win games. You're not paid to develop players to send them to the NFL. Like, you want to keep your people happy, win. But we're now starting to see that bleed into the NFL where, all right, owners want points, 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 and the next offensive guru. And so what does that lead to? Leads to a lot of, you know, schemed up shot plays, and, you know, we're seeing more college type offenses in the NFL, and it also leads to not a lot of, like, you know, I think there's a reason why Brady, things had to fall the right way, but Brady in his 40s could take a team to a Super Bowl. Like, there is, and now we're having fewer and fewer of those guys that know how to play the position, and so you're getting this entire generation of guys that have grown up in RPOs and playing quarterback in a very specific way. And now it's just like, that's what the game is.
And the one certainty there is they're getting paid.
Yes.
Once they're, you know, we've got to pay this guy. And I don't know that they, you know, yes, they put the years into him and they've gone down that road. So this is our guy and we've invested in him, but how do you invest in a quarterback completely? And it's on the quarterback too. You know, you see, this quarterback had a camp, you know, in the offseason with his players and stuff like that. But yeah, are they, you know, they're on the beach or they're doing this and they're having exercises, bonding exercises. But, you know, that isn't, you know, seeing a secondary. And that's a big thing right now. I want to see in week two here, you know, and we can see as much. And yeah, get rid of the fourth preseason game. I understand that. But when the lights go on in a few weeks and it's week one, we're going to see some ugly play.
Oh yes, bad tackling.
Right?
We'll see sloppy.
Yeah.
We'll see sloppy football. That's the way.
And even as these quarterbacks, as we consider them elite and top, you know, top draft picks and stuff like that, the level of speed that they're going to see, and the schemes that they're going to see, it's simply going to be ugly. You know, there are going to be bumps in the road early on, and who can limit those? But the athletes, the quarterbacks who can run over the last, you know, they've covered up those things where, okay, I can tuck the ball and run. But once they start taking that away, now you have to pass. Again, you know, what you're seeing and where that pocket is open, all of a sudden that pocket's gone. As soon as you raise the elbow, that pocket's gone, but you've already committed to going in that direction. First couple of weeks of the NFL season, for the last couple of years, I think of it just, you know,
very sloppy.
Yeah,
it's been sloppy.
Yeah, and that's what we're going to see.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll turn our attention to college football. Tim Murray joins us next. Stick around. You'll listen to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options, from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey.
Tim Murray is the host of VSiN Primetime, airing weeknights live from 5 until 8 p.m. local time. Also, download, like, subscribe, you know the drill, VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast. He's on Twitter, on X, at 1TimMurray. Tim, we have our second preseason poll. It's the AP Top 25 this time. I think the thing that was interesting to me is you have the same 25 teams ranked in both polls, obviously in a little bit different order, but more or less kind of in the same range. Is that groupthink? What do we think the reasoning behind it is?
Yeah, it might be. It might be a little groupthink. I mean, it's really hard, and I know for us as we get excited for the start of the season, it's hard for me to care about these polls anymore, you know, because we know they mean nothing. Like, they used to, in the BCS era, at least accounted for, what was it, like 25% or whatever it was. They are truly meaningless now, outside of, as a bettor, when an unranked team is favored versus a ranked team.
Oh, yeah.
You go talk to your neighbor and see what he thinks, and he is dumbfounded why the ranked team is an underdog, and then you bet the other side. Obviously, that would be part of that. But
although I think, hasn't Vegas gotten wise to that? Like, I feel like that's not the surefire winner that it used to be.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I think we as the collective betting groups, or you know, betting collective, I should say. Yeah, it's not as easy as it once was. It was a stretch where you just blindly said,
It was like you were
unranked
like
team,
90%. Favored. It was awesome.
Let's rock and roll. So, to answer your question, maybe it is a little groupthink. You know, I didn't even put them side by side as I look at them right now. It's pretty wild. I mean, they are, you know, maybe the SIDs that vote on this and the media are simpatico, because let's be honest, we know coaches aren't really voting on that thing. So, I guess from your perspective, from the local side there, Boise State a little bit more love from the AP poll than the coaches poll, right? Or yeah. Memphis less love, I should say. Boise State was number 28 in the AP poll, and Memphis was the highest G5 team in the coaches poll. But yeah, it's meaningless outside of, you know, honestly, if I were ESPN, Fox, you know, CBS, et cetera, I'd be asking for some of these, be like, hey, can we put Florida in the top 25? I know they're not ranked, but it just adds a little intrigue to week one. So we get a top 25 matchup between Florida and Miami. I mean, to be honest, I would do that. Just why not? Like, you know, Notre Dame, Texas A&M, that's a ranked showdown. Clemson, Georgia, ranked showdown. LSU, USC, ranked showdown. Throw Florida in there. Why not? You know, make Miami, Florida ranked showdown. It makes it a little more interesting. We know these rankings don't mean anything.
I had to go back to make sure I was right. So since 2021, so the first season where we had fans back, 50 games of... unranked team against a ranked team that was favored. They've covered 27 of 23. They were 5-2 last year, so it may be a little
so
bit
so no edge.
But like I'm like you, if we're just acknowledging it's a TV product, give us ranked teams. You know
Why
what
not?
I mean? I think that's kind of the other thing. I'm gonna give us as fans credit. I think we've all collectively come to realize, like, all right, maybe there was a day and age where this kind of mattered. Now it's like it all tends to sort itself out. And we kind of, I think we've realized, like, if you deserve to be ranked by week three, it usually kind of, the opportunity presents itself.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to bring it closer to home for you guys, if you want, and now that the playoff has expanded, it doesn't matter. But I really thought, to be honest, the only thing that mattered with these AP preseason poll was where the G5 program was.
Yep.
If we wanted to have them crash the party, because we knew they had to start in the top 25. And really, they probably had to start in like the top 15. Now it doesn't really matter. You know, now they've got a guaranteed seat at the table. If you want to try to avoid the number 12 spot and facing the top non-bye team, then, you know, you need to do some work. But, yeah, I think I'm just looking at it right now, and I don't really – I've gone past the days of getting fired up. And, I you know, I give the AP – I think the AP folks are pretty smart. One guy did vote – or I don't know if it was a guy or a gal. One person did vote Colorado to be a top 25 team. Yeah, let's pump the brakes a little bit there. But I really don't know. Do you have any issues with it? I don't. I mean, I guess Michigan being ninth, but they're the defending champs, man. Like, yeah, we know they've lost a lot and they lost their coach and a ton, but to your point, it'll sort itself out. Michigan, if there's a team that likely is not ranked inside the top 10, which we have seen, I think, each of the last 4 years, my guess would be Michigan. You know, I think Florida State will drop a little bit, but I do think they're well coached well enough. I don't think their schedule is crazy daunting. It has some, actually has some challenges because they play both Clemson and Miami and Notre Dame as well as Florida. So I guess in theory you could see Florida State drop four games, but no, I think for the most part, you know, Ole Miss, preseason hype, but they're sitting there at six. Alabama maybe a little bit high just because of what they lost and Saban being gone, but you know, their track record is sparkling. Like Alabama was in the playoff last year, and if you know, their center is snapping a little bit higher, they might beat Michigan, and maybe they win the national championship, you know? So it's, yeah, it's, I really don't have any issues with it, and I'm just kind of excited that, you know, Texas A&M is a ranked team, so we get a ranked showdown there in the primetime game on that Saturday. I'm excited that USC got in there so that we see USC-LSU. That's a ranked showdown on the Sunday of Labor Day weekend, you know? I almost wish Clemson was a little bit higher, to be honest. So we got, like, a top 10 matchup week one between Georgia and Clemson.
Yeah, back to your Michigan point. Like, okay, yes, I think we both think they're going to drop off, but how many teams in that league are going to have as good of a roster as they are? I mean, Ohio State, I mean, I guess Penn State and Oregon, I think they only play two of those three. They get SC, they get Texas. Like, my thing is with them, it's like, they're still good enough defensively that I very much think they could be 9-3 and 10-2, and they're still going to be a top 10 team.
You know, for me, the thing that I'm really curious about Michigan is that week two game against Texas.
Yeah.
Because Texas continues to get dinged. It's a running back, but still, man, you know, you're losing your starting running back, your, I think, third string running back. He got hurt the other day. I don't know how serious it's going to be.
And A&M's starting running back. It must be something in the water in Texas.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're starting. It's, I mean, you know, you see the news of J.J. McCarthy today. We're waiting on Jahmyr Gibbs. I mean, the injuries, it sucks. I mean, it's the nature of the sport.
Welcome to preseason football.
It's the nature. I mean, look, as a Notre Dame fan, hey, first day of camp, you lost your left tackle, who you already had questions about. You're like, yay, wonderful. So, yeah, it's the nature of the beast. We're going to get injuries. Obviously, we know that. But there's two games that now the way that – as we've become friends and talked on this show long enough, there's two games that are now I'm starting to get like a little bit of intrigue on the other side. So week one, has anybody said anything nice about Florida all offseason?
No, you're doing the same thing that I do. And maybe it's because we've watched the sport for so long.
Everybody, and I am guilty of it. Look, I could point you to multiple podcasts this summer where I'm like, holy smokes, look at that schedule for Florida. And I think it will take its toll on the Gators. Will it take its toll week one at home where you're Sunbelt Billy? You've got all the pressure in the world on you, and you're going to have a packed house with an in-state rival who's got all this hype. Hey, they got Cam Ward. He was pretty cool at Washington State. They got Damian Martinez. He was pretty cool at Oregon State. They could win the national championship. They could win the ACC. And Florida has to just be sitting back and say, cool, come into 127 degrees of humidity at 3:30 in the afternoon and beat us. Prove it to us. So I haven't gotten to the window yet. I just want people to keep betting it. I want a three, man. Give me that three. So I like Florida in that spot just from a contrarian standpoint because I think Florida's better than they were last year.
I tend to agree. Also, while you and I are never going to be stumping for Graham Mertz,
his numbers were good last year.
And first of all,
look at him.
He knows what they're going to ask him to do. Cam Ward's going in start number one with another new team.
And Cam Ward, as fun as he is, did Washington State get to a bowl game last year?
Well, also, nope. When's the last time that Mario Cristobal like got the most out of a fun quarterback?
Right. Yeah, he had Justin Herbert, and what did that get him? I mean, they won the Rose Bowl. I guess I shouldn't laugh at that, but they probably should have won more. And then I'm starting to convince myself a little bit on Michigan week two. They're going to be a home dog, Michigan against Texas, and there's all this hype and belief in this Texas team right now. I'm catching north of a field goal with Michigan at home at the Big House against Texas right now. So, and I think the public will want to back Texas.
So the only thing that scares me, I'm with you on Florida. Like also, like that game just smells to me exactly like when Utah came to Florida 2 years ago. Like, you know what I mean? Like that. This Florida team's going to be overlooked. Like Napier's going to take the complete air out of it. They're going to play defense. They're going to make Ward have to make some big throws. Like I'm with you on that one. The only problem that I have with Michigan is, do we know if they can actually throw the football?
No, we don't. I don't know if they can throw the football. I don't know if they can catch the football. All I know is they have Donovan Edwards. That's pretty much it. I know their defense is really good. You know, Bud Elliott from CBS Sports was on my show last week, and he felt like they might still have the best front seven in college football. I'm not there yet. I'm just floating it out there right now. Week two, Michigan catching 3.5 at home against Texas. And I'll say this. Texas win total right now, and it's juiced to the under. Texas win total is 10.5, meaning if they lose two games, you win your bet. Do you know who they play October 19th? Granted, it's at home.
That would be Georgia, correct?
Yes, they play Georgia. Do you know who they wrap up the season with on the road?
That would be the Texas A&M Aggies.
Do you think they're going to be a little fired up for that game?
Especially if it's like, if A&M knows, like A&M's at its best when they know they can just ruin your season.
Who do they play the week before Georgia? There is no way that Texas is going to sweep Oklahoma and Georgia. Could they split with them? Sure. But you got a rivalry game, your arch rival, and then, oh, by the way, hey, Georgia's coming to your house the next week. You host Florida. Once again, I'm not sold on Florida, but you're at Michigan, neutral Oklahoma, home to Georgia at A&M. You got to go 3-1 in those games in order to get your win total over 10.5. That is a big ask, man. They can make the playoff, absolutely. But you're telling me Texas is going 11-1 this year with that schedule? With those landmines out there? That's tough, man.
So I've been kind of doing the same thing. It's almost like if I had a little bit of faith that Michigan could throw it, I think I'm there. Because I still don't think the secondary has been fixed.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.